Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
What's up, hustlers? This is Andrew Morgans, founder of Marknology, host for today's episode of Startup Hustle, covering all things e-commerce and Amazon. This show is brought to you by Fullscale.io today, helping you build software teams quickly and affordably. If you are a software company, if your company engages in software activities, Fullscale.io is a great place to find talent and plug those holes that you need within your own team. I'm super excited about today's guest. We're going to be talking about some fun stuff. I don't know how detailed we'll get, but Jack, feel free to be as comfortable as you would like to be. We're going to get into the show. Jack, say hello.
Hey, what's up, everybody?
Yeah, this is Jack from everydaydose.com. We're going to dig into kind of like his origin story here at the beginning and dig into just like what he's created. I have yet to try it, but I'm excited too. Jessica from our team said she already made an order, so she's a step ahead of me. The last time I had shrooms of any kind was in a shake in Thailand at a full moon festival, which was exciting for me. So let's dig into it. Jack, like, let's start a little bit at the beginning. You know, how did you get started in e-commerce? Like, you know, did you know you're always going to be an entrepreneur? Let's go back as comfortable as you're, or as far back as you're comfortable going.
Sure. So e-commerce is pretty new to me, actually. It's very new, less than 3 months.
Okay.
So a lot of learning over the last 6 to 12 months, actually, just like setting it up to get ready for where we are today. But before that, I was actually in the club business in New York City. Okay. The Airbnb business, and so this is very new.
Can we talk about that a little bit? Like, sure. So I'm in the Airbnb business. I manage about 20 plus here in Kansas City. As kind of like, that's my second or third business that's outside of Amazon. I really fell into it because I love traveling, and so it was, you know, swap out my place while I'm traveling and not lose as much money. And it just kind of grew from there with my digital marketing experience, from photography to the copy to the reviews, which is very similar to Amazon. It just made a lot of sense for me to run.
That's badass.
Thank you.
I was on AirDNA, which is a platform to basically look at rent to revenue ratios. And I was actually looking at Kansas City a while back. And so it's very cool that you opened up so many.
Thank you.
So the same thing, I was traveling, I wanted to rent out my apartment, realized that, whoa, this is actually making me real money. So I opened up another one, before you knew it, I had a whole portfolio in New York City.
We won't get you in trouble here, but it's like, it's really hard to Airbnb in New York, right?
Yeah, we got shut down on most of them. And even like, so how I was able to avoid that loophole is I'd make deals with landlords and I would say, hey, listen, I'm going to rent multiple units in your apartment building. I'm going to put someone to live in each unit. They're going to manage it and we're going to rent out private rooms. So basically, private room is legal in New York City. So it was basically just like a live-in house manager. And we just basically said to like artists and musicians, hey, listen, you could live in New York City for free. Don't fuck up or you're out. You know, make sure it's clean, make sure that guests are happy and you're good to go. You've got free rent in New York City. So did that for a while. But even like New York City's Airbnb task force, it's the mayor's office task force, which was funded by the hotel industry, targeted even private rooms. So even though I had very successful private rooms in Williamsburg, which is a area in Brooklyn.
Love Williamsburg.
Yeah, it's pretty, I like it a lot too. I still have my spot even though I'm in Topanga right now. But they would knock on doors, they'd say, hey, they'd show their badge. Hey, we're the Airbnb task force. They'd be like, we're a part of the New York City task force. Can we come in? And they're asking, can we come in? So these guests are like, yeah, sure. And they would just find little infractions and like write infractions on the building. And then I would get in trouble with the landlord. We would get kicked out. So at this point, I pretty much just have one Airbnb, which is kind of a bummer.
It sucks. Yeah. That's fine. We face some challenges here in Kansas City. I know New York is like taking it on in a huge way. Mm-hmm. Here, more so, they've implemented policy that just like stupid little loopholes. Like, but ways to get around that is like having an in-home host or like, you know, they'll approve those no problem. We did a container home. Brought a container over from China and turned it into a mini home and was Airbnbing it out.
And how much did that cost to buy the container and to build it out?
Around 30K. And it could be done cheaper, but I was moving fast and I had to redo some stuff, some mistakes. I also put like a fence around the yard and like, you know, real plumbing and did like, I definitely didn't cut corners.
Was it septic?
It has its own plumbing. We run it to a house like that's okay. On the same property. Ran, you know, electrical to it. So it's got a porch. It's got, you know, it's just got a little bit more than just like setting a container on some land and being like, what did this cost me to get it done?
Yeah. I would just see myself buying six of those.
It was like this was supposed to be the pilot, you know, like if we can make this one work, then we can go all in kind of thing. And it was also about like free land. So we had land, didn't have to buy land to try the idea. It was just like, how do I get rid of the roadblocks that allow me to try this idea?
Badass. And, well, if you're ever investing in any more, let me know. I might throw some cash at you.
All right, because cool.
It's such a good business. Honestly, to leeway that into like the other stuff, Airbnb is certainly what like financed my investments in crypto and also investments in startups like NSFW, which is the sex club in New York City, which is the club that I have in New York City. It's a private members club for sexually adventurous New Yorkers and cannabis enthusiasts.
I've actually heard of it, or at least seen it recommended by some people that I like follow with or that I've worked with. I'm not the kind to try it out myself when I'm there. But I think it's cool. I think anything that's outside the box that, you know, fills a service or fills a need for people is awesome. Especially if people aren't doing it, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's for all different types of people. And we have different events that are for different types of people.
Okay.
And it was pretty hard during COVID. So we've been around for about 5 years. Started it with Daniel Saint.
Okay.
He's basically the chief conspirator of NSFW. And NSFW stands for the New Society for Wellness.
It's not safe for work?
No. It's a little play on words.
I love it.
Yeah. So he actually came from Nylon Magazine. He was the head of digital there and had this idea. Started out of his apartment in Soho. Grew into a four-story clubhouse in Williamsburg. Then we opened up. We got too big for that. We opened up a space in the West Village. Didn't have some licensing and permits, and so we were pushed out. And now we've got everything properly permitted, and we're in just south of Canal on Broadway.
Okay. That's super cool.
Yeah,
and so the club's still open like during the pandemic, or it's been on pause?
It's been on pause. It's been pretty difficult. Like, it was a pretty good cash flow for me for a while, but because we have got 5,000 profiles that are communicating through our platform where people are meeting. So it's like a little social media for sexually progressive New Yorkers. And then we've got we used to have five events every single week at our clubhouse. And that got shut down since like from March to basically this month. So we just relaunched. But between now and 5 years ago, we've been to the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Forbes, Playboy, Time Out,
awesome.
You name it. Vice wrote about us and said we're the Soho House of sex clubs, which was kind of cool. And
big compliments.
Yeah, it was fun. And now we've got about 5 events going on every week from like
Back up in March.
Yeah, we're trying to create community. So it's not just like fuck, right? It's like open mic where people can do like singing and performance, like comedy. We've got another night where it's like sacred pleasure. We're doing like massage and yoga, like naked yoga. So it's just, it's not necessarily only like sex, you know. It's, we're having a thing called Dankwit, which is actually gonna be pretty awesome. Every Sunday we'll have a famous chef in New York that will do like a prefix.
Ooh.
And we'll have like mushrooms and cannabis, mushrooms cool. being everyday dose.
Okay. Know? Let's talk about that. So, I know a lot of people like, you know, I'm like so in my own world when I'm kind of like really in a creative mode, you know, so I can just be like head down to the computer, head in the book or whatever. And, I know a lot of people like microdose. You know, I've dabbled in all types of things. I've never got to the point where I'm like consistently microdosing. But the curiosity is mainly because in at least from my perspective, it was a lot of work for me to grind everything down and put it in pills and then try this thing. And then, you know, so talk about Everyday Dose. Like, where did the idea come up for it? You said the funding has come from Airbnb or at least like,
A while ago. It's like a bunch of things.
But. Okay. Yeah, let's get into that. So you just started into e-commerce. I know that you guys, obviously, there's everydaydose.com. I checked that out. But you're running a sex club and you're running Airbnbs kind of like in this hospital. Like, what do people want? I would assume like you're kind of like filling those needs. Was there this other kind of request constantly for things like this, and it was like, or was it your own desires? I was like, I'm gonna try to come up with something like for myself, and by doing it, I've created something really cool for other people. Or kind of what was the initial kind of light bulb, or like that pushed you in this direction?
Yeah. So really quick, I actually don't run NSFW anymore. Daniel is okay. running NSFW. I'm more on the back end, strategic. So, but back to Everyday Dough. So. A little bit of background. Everyday Dose is an alternative to stimulants and highly caffeinated drinks. Okay. And so we're combining mushrooms, fully legal mushrooms. So we're talking about microdose, but this is fully legal, 100% pure fruiting bodied mushroom extracts.
Okay.
Where we're doing like beta glucan testing, testing for mycotoxins, allergens, and molds and heavy metals. We're also mixing collagen and nootropics like L-theanine. So how I got started, is my basically for myself. So for 20 mm-hmm. years, I was on Adderall.
Okay.
Well, I first started with like Ritalin, then Concerta, Focalin, and then finally landed on Adderall. And after being on this for 20 years, I needed to figure out some sort of alternative because I had high blood pressure. I was extremely irritable and emotional. Mm-hmm. And I just was like 25 and I'm like, I can't continue doing this for the rest of my life. And so I actually had the download on psychedelic mushrooms. I was like, I can't do this anymore. So to be a functioning member of society, I had to look into like health and wellness and supplements. So I got really into diets. I did every single diet in the book. I looked into supplements. I got really inspired by, you know, 2012, 2013, I was listening to Joe Rogan. And one of his biggest sponsors then as well was Aubrey Marcus and Alpha Brain, which is on it. And so I was buying Alpha Brain, which is their like nootropic. Yeah. But I was pretty broke back then. So I was like, all right, I can't continue to spend like 60, 70 bucks a month on the supplements. So I started researching the supplements that are the ingredients that were in the supplement. And I just started getting into biohacking and like supplements. And I learned about lion's mane.
Okay.
There actually isn't lion's mane in Alpha Brain, if I'm pretty sure. Don't quote me on that. But like that, just from doing my research, I discovered lion's mane, and I started talking to friends, how I got off of Adderall. People started coming to me like on how to be healthier. So I would start sending people an email of like, these are supplements that you should be taking every day. And one of the drinks that I was coming up with was a cacao drink. It was like mushrooms, cacao, and collagen.
Okay.
It was essentially the mushroom latte, but instead of a little bit of coffee, we have a little bit of cacao to mask the 1.5 grams of mushrooms that we put in the products. And so after I was beta test, so basically I started sending this list to people, and the list would be like anywhere from like $100 to $200 in total cost if you're buying the lion's mane, the chaga, the collagen, and the L-theanine, and the cacao. And it was just not economical, and like we would have to weigh out all the different ingredients and then mix it. It was just inconvenient. Yep. So I thought about, okay, well, a friend of mine actually from Jordan Lejuan, who started, he was the co-founder of the Gravity Blanket, was over at my house, and he's like, dude, you need to make this into a drink. So I started making it as a drink. People, the feedback was, hey, it's great. And I was like, well, why aren't you finishing your 30-day supply? And they're like, well, just chocolate is too rich for me. And I was like, oh, I get it. Not everybody's like me. Not everybody wants to have cacao in the morning and noon and night. Mm-hmm. Everybody's addicted to their coffee. So let's not reinvent the wheel. Let's just add a little bit of coffee just for flavor. And so they can get that sort of coffee feel, but then also have all those incredible ingredients underneath as like sort of a vehicle. And we were able to basically, I was able to wholesale all these ingredients individually from every single, like a different collagen supplier, a different coffee supplier, a different mushroom supplier, a different L-theanine supplier. And I was able to find the best ingredients of each category to create everyday dose and to make it economical.
I love it. That's beautiful. And you can obviously tell what I know about it, you know, even by the questions I'm asking, but like, I know that like, I'm definitely an optimizer in my life. Like whether I'm optimizing my desk, my workout, my, you know, cleaning the house, going to the gym, like what's my gym routine? Like I'm definitely trying to optimize. And as you're an entrepreneur, you're doing so many things that you're like, okay, how can I get this 8-hour day to 4? I mean, it's 4-hour day to 2. And that's the same thing with health, like health hacking. Like, it's just like, okay, how can I, in a short amount of time, eat what I need to eat without spending all day cooking, or like get the workout I need to get in without being 3 hours in there. And you're right. You're talking about like you found this ideal list, you know, of the ingredients you need based on trying them and figuring out what that mix is. And then you're just like, this is a $200 list and it's all this huge process. I'm spending my whole day just getting my Adderall, basically, you know, at that point, a natural version of it.
Yeah, nature's Adderall.
Yeah. I mean, and so it becomes like just as much like a lot of times we know what to do. We're just like, that takes a lot of time. You know, how can I get that quicker, faster, more efficiently? I think a lot of entrepreneurs would really respond to it. And, you know, what is the like feeling, I guess, does it take like a while to be on it to kind of get it going? Or is it something that you experience in a couple of days of being there? Like, you know, I know like a vitamin, you don't take a vitamin, a daily vitamin, and be like, oh my God, I feel like I'm ready to take on the world. But it's something that you know is good for you. And over time, you know, that it has an impact. Is that kind of the same thing? Like what's the, you know, if someone's taking it outside of taste, what would they experience?
Yeah, I would say there's a two-step experience. That's the way of putting it. But essentially the first experience, you're gonna notice an elevated mood pretty much right away. But and like a lot more mental clarity. Okay. But over time, like say 21, 30, 40, 50 days, you're going to start noticing like a much higher cognitive ability. So you're going to notice like the memory, your memory is increasing, your verbal fluency is increasing, and just overall, you're getting better sleep.
Okay.
And that's with a big better one. Yeah, sleep is huge, because if you're throwing so much caffeine in your body every day, like you might be able to fall asleep, but are you staying asleep? Mm-hmm. Like, are you, or maybe you're having trouble falling asleep and finally you fall asleep, you can stay, or maybe you wake up in the middle of the night because you have to pee. And these are all due to different reasons of like what you're doing to your body during the day. Really, we should be able to go to sleep 8 hours and wake up, you know, maybe it's like 7 hours.
Right. Yeah. Like depending on your human, like makeup or whatever, like whatever that individual person is. No.
Yeah.
I think you're exactly right.
And then, if you're just like, if you're hyping up your adenosine, like adrenaline, and your cortisol, it's going to be really hard to basically calm down and slow down. So is that a dog?
Yeah. So I have a puppy. I'm really sorry.
No worries.
I've been an entrepreneur. I'm going on 7 years, and I haven't had the time for a dog. I've just been like, to be a good dog dad or like whatever, you got to give them time. You got to play with them. You got to like, you know, raise them right, I guess. And so during the pandemic, I've just been like, I know a lot of people moved to that or whatever, but I'm like, I've got a yard now. I've got like, you know, some employees that can run stuff. I've got my mom moved here. So I knew what I was getting into. I still didn't know what I was getting into. This little guy is a monster. I'll show you. Come here. Just a beast. So he's got these posts in his ears.
Oh, yeah. I was like, what are these?
and he shook them out today. So they're just sitting there. But he's a Doberman. So
cool. Congrats. Yeah.
Thank you. It's something to focus on besides myself. So that's kind of nice. You know, when you're in entrepreneur mode, you're just like, got to do this, got to get this done, got to get this done, got to be efficient here, got to be optimized here. And I think you got to set these things in your life, whether it's moving to somewhere like California outside New York, or, you know, destination places or specific things you're doing that just kind of like pull you outside of that focus mode. You know,
otherwise you're going to get burnt out.
Exactly.
Seriously.
Yeah, and if you learn that early, before it's like the end of the game, you know, you got to make adjustments. And so for me, I got a little pup. Yeah, working alongside me today. He's just like, come play with me. So apologies in advance.
No worries, man. I think my way of escaping is it's like work, piano, snowboard, repeat.
Okay, I like it. Snowboarding, like, mine has always been traveling shows. I love going to music, like experiencing shows. Like the last time I was in New York, was at Brooklyn Steel. That was a good show. Venue. Yeah.
Who did you see?
I saw a band called Polyphia.
Okay.
Polyphia and Pliny. They're just like metal acoustic, or like no lyrics, just instrumental metal. It was pretty cool. I want to see how the East Coast threw down a little bit.
It's a good venue to check out.
No, it was super cool. And I've only been to New York like 5 times. Like, it's probably been the last 2 years that I started like traveling more and going to New York and stuff. And I'm just in love. I stayed in, I was in the almost like the industrial area of Brooklyn.
It's like Greenpoint. It's a little bit east of Greenpoint.
Yeah. And it was just like, just kicked it there and just explored Brooklyn for a week. It was a good time. Honestly felt safer than Kansas City in a lot of areas. So, you know, Kansas City's
pretty safe at this point.
That's what it felt like to me. It was pre-pandemic. So, you know, it was, normal, I guess. I'm sure it's a lot different now. And, you know, I know a lot of people that are there that have just moved back home or moved back to the Midwest or moved just to like, hey, if we're going to be stuck in a pandemic where we can't engage with people, let's at least get close to nature, you know?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I think there's a little delay, but like, so you're in California snowboarding, playing piano. I used to tour full-time for five years about playing bass. And that was my first probably business venture, I would say, like where I was just like all in trying to make this my living. Like, and there's a certain level of creativity and freedom that's like unmatched in that kind of lifestyle. But also being poor sucks. So, yeah. You know, I don't like living in a van. Or in hotels. So that's not really my style. But piano, you've been playing piano your whole life?
I played a lot in high school. I was in a band called Jan Janssen. Okay. And then I stopped pretty much through college and after college. And then when I moved out to Topanga, I got a piano keyboard, unfortunately. It's just not the same.
It's not the same.
And it's nice to feel the creative flow and be able to take some breaks and time for myself. And that's actually sometimes like the best time to come up with ideas. So you're just like flowing, right? And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I know how to solve this now.
Yeah, you're doing something else, maybe even something else that you're good at that you can do at muscle memory, kind of. And I feel like it's in that when your brain disconnects a little bit and you can process other stuff, versus if you're having to focus on what you're doing, like something you're not great at, and you're having to like learn it, your brain's occupied, you know. Mm-hmm. So I've actually really struggled during the pandemic to find new hobbies outside of like traveling and shows and stuff like that actually allow me to disconnect. You know, versus just being super hyper focused on a problem. And I think that's where like everyday dose, it just keeps tying in, right? But like my wants or desires to even like try microdosing or try some of those things is like hearing about the sweet spots and creativity that you can find, you know, when you're dozing like that. And what is that like? What kind of creativity is that like? You know, as a business owner, I constantly go back and forth between like, I'm a creative, but I know that I need to be super organized and like business minded and like systemized and process oriented, to grow my business and to get things done. So it's like this constant back and forth of trying to switch between the different modes. That's been a challenge.
Yeah. I've had to I'm always on the creative mode, but recently I'm more on the operating mode.
Okay.
To go into like more everyday dose and DTC and e-commerce stuff, I would say supply chain and logistics is just a complete headache.
It's a lot. It's a lot.
Yeah, especially when you're first launching and you don't know what kind of demand you're going to have.
Yeah.
So I ran into the situation recently where like we're bringing in 100 to 200 new customers a day, which is stupid.
It's crazy awesome.
Subscription. And we're going to be running out of supply very soon. So like right now I've got like our – so we make all of our boxes in China.
Okay.
And we then assemble them in the U.S. And we, of course, do our manufacturing and blending of our ingredients all in Utah, which is like one of the top nutraceutical areas. And I've got about 5,000 boxes on a ship right now, and we're going to be running out before that ship lands. So just trying to figure out and navigate how to navigate the customer experience of, okay, giving them what they want, but also not having what they want.
Right.
it's been quite challenging doing all these different things with e-commerce. So I'm sure you can teach me a lot on that stuff.
Well, we've had that problem with a brand that we've 4X'd year over year over year over year for 4 years straight. And each year we try to plan a little bit better logistically, but like we can't always, we're launching 200 new SKUs with that brand a year. And it's like, we don't know which ones are going to take off and which ones aren't. And, cause it's a bit of a leap of faith. You do your best to optimize them. You do your best to have a strategy. You do your best to have a go-to-market plan, there's a part of it that's like, let's see how the customer reacts to this.
Can I ask you, so when you have 200 SKUs, are you sending those SKUs to Amazon to warehouse for you?
Yes. So
you don't have to worry about storage. I forget how that works with Amazon.
I help brands with e-commerce websites. We actually have Fulfillment by Marknology here, which is a 3PL warehousing. So I understand logistics as well. For my own brands, I wanted to be able to run my own stuff. And so we've just opened that up to some of our customers as well. But when it comes to Amazon, it can be either or. So almost every brand that sells in FBA and sends their product into Amazon to fulfill it, I also suggest that we have a warehouse set up with a backup SKU. We call that FBM, fulfilled by merchant, where if they run out of inventory at Amazon, it kicks over and then that warehouse can start shipping direct to customers. So it's not prime, but it's the next best thing. And so we're never out of stock. Like momentum is like super important on Amazon. It's an algorithm. Let's say you had 200 customers that are on subscribe and save on Amazon, which is like subscription where it's, reoccurring. Amazon's going to punish you if you don't ship to them on their reoccurring order.
It makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and it's like, that's a scoring system. On your end, you have to deal with customers being upset and keeping them, but you're not going to get like shut down from Amazon, or Amazon's not going to like slap your wrist if you're just doing it directly on your website. So that's also what makes Amazon amazing. Sorry, this guy is crazy. That's what also makes Amazon amazing is the consistency and customers understanding what they're getting and trust, because Amazon enforces that, which makes brands do it. Versus websites are, they can be like, have you ever ordered anything from like an artist and they're just like, you wait like almost 6 months to get that hoodie or that album or like whatever it is. Cause it's just kind of the Wild West when it comes to websites. Amazon kind of set that standard. So it's kind of dialing it in. We're always trying to have like 45 days of supply, never too much that you're getting hit with tons of storage fees, never too little that you're running out. It's about finding the sweet spot for sure.
So 45 days of supply with an average of how many per day?
It depends on what your average is per day.
So like you launched a new brand with 200 SKUs. How can a new brand be able to predict something that's new, how much to have of each SKU?
So the brand that we're launching with, they're not launching for the very first time. They've already got SKUs moving and things like that. So sometimes this is adding another color to a product we're already selling or adding a new like flavor. So we'll go kind of off of estimates of what SKUs in that same category are doing. And then some of it is they have other relationships like Home Depot and Lowe's and different stuff like that. What quantities are those companies ordering? So in some instances, they're ordering a lot more per SKU than others, right? So they just got more. And then it's also like size matters. So like if we have a really big garden product, like let's say a fairy house versus like just a gnome, it's going to be different. We're going to be like, you know, we're going to send more of the gnomes in than the big fairy houses. And so it just becomes kind of like price point, lower price point items we're sending more in, higher price point items you can expect to sell less. But at the beginning it is, it's a bit of a crapshoot, like, you know, kind of trying to figure out that normal cadence. But very rarely is it like you launch on Amazon and instantaneously you've sold a pallet worth of goods. Like it's a ramp up. So if you're paying attention and you don't have a long lead time, you should be okay. If you have a long lead time, that's where you're in trouble.
My lead time is right now 65 days.
It's long.
Yeah. So 30 days to manufacture or 25, 30 days to manufacture, 30 days to send by sea.
Yep. That's where a lot of it comes in. And it could be that you have a second manufacturer for your boxes that when the need comes, like, cool, if you can get them at that price in China, fantastic, and save money on your boxes. But if it comes to a point of losing customers or paying a higher price to have an American box company, you know, give you some boxes in the short run.
Maybe you know of a good box company that I could use.
I do.
Cool. And then, that do custom inserts and stuff.
Yep, I do actually.
We'll have to talk about that.
I just toured them like a couple weeks ago, which was really cool because I've definitely been involved in like designing boxes and inserts and all that kind of stuff. But usually we're going to China. And
yeah, I got to send you my box. I'm really excited. I should have done it before the show so you could be enjoying a dose with me.
Okay. Well, I'll have to order actually. I like to support myself. So I'll get on there.
Super exciting though. Sorry.
It's super cool. Like honestly, as I've been in the Amazon space 9 years. And so I'm still learning stuff every day, like getting to tour a box manufacturing plant and see how stuff works and like how this is new high tech and how this is old tech, and still learning different parts of the process, because when you're going direct to consumer from manufacturing it, especially if you're manufacturing it yourself, to when it arrives in their house and how they're feeling and experiencing it is like, it's a long chain. And so there's stuff all along the way.
I've got 15 vendors to get the starter kit to their house.
Yes. That's a lot to coordinate. And so then it becomes, you know, in the same way that Marknology, my company has built out more services and more services, because I realize if I'm trying to solve their pain points, like brands and, you know, manufacturers that we're working with, their pain points are having to deal with 15 of us doing all little different things for their business. And so it's how can I take some of that pain away, or take away some of that struggle, and be like, okay, yeah, we do fulfillment as well. Yeah, we do photography as well. Yeah, we can design your inserts. Like you don't need a design firm and this, you know. And there's, you know, obviously if you're specializing, and that's where I think you come in, is that you need to go to all these different ones to find the exact experts. That can be a challenge. But if you're like, this is exactly what I need and this is the hard way, and then from there you figure out just little ways to make it easier and easier. And easier,
you know? It's also nice to be able to know, okay, this is what the fair market price is for this. This is what the fair market price is for that, versus going to like a co-packer and they're like, hey, I'll source all the ingredients for you. I'll find your packaging and I'll blend it for you and I'll ship it to your warehouse. They're going to mark
everything up.
And also you don't have control of who are the vendors that they're using for their collagen or their coffee or their mushrooms. So for me, it's been really nice to be able to know, okay, I can get the top, like the number one mushroom company. I can get the number one collagen, where it's like not only grass fed collagen, but grass finished, which is weirdly, it's actually a difference. If anybody wants to learn more about that, it's crazy that you can call meat grass fed, but then they actually finish it with corn or grain fed. Because in the beginning of their life and the end of their life, somehow, as long as you've done part of it grass, they can say that.
But a marketing ploy. I hate that, dude. Like honestly,
labeling is insane.
Yeah, learning, and Amazon is like prime for that. Like, you know, and I would like to say, like, we're a company that's been, I know all the black hat. I like staying white hat. I like working with companies that are like legit versus trying to like create a product just for Amazon. That's a lot of the big buzz, but that's just not what we do. Like, we specialize in bringing brands to Amazon or maximizing them on Amazon, not creating brands for Amazon. Because I don't, specifically around the supplement space, like I've built brands from zero to over a million a year on Amazon from inception, you know? And so I've seen, and I've done that in the supplement space. So like, I understand the competition there. it's a lot. It's a lot of competition, and you're getting kind of the worst of the competitors, and the worst, in my opinion, like kind of the worst, more cutthroat competitors in the supplement space than in other spaces. Like if you're in garden decor, like I'm telling you, you're not getting very like cutthroat competitors. Like they're just not there. You know, it's just a different space.
You're seeing that in mushrooms too now.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I've seen it in every type of supplement. That's why Amazon now has these like stricter regulations. They just came out in the last 6 months of this paperwork you have to submit and all this kind of stuff to show you're like selling people legit product, you know, because you don't know, like, and you don't know what's in it really. Labels like false marketing. The more I learn about marketing, the more I appreciate good marketing. Okay. I do appreciate like good marketing now, because I know more about it, but also seeing all the false, you know, pushes, like they can call something organic. It's not organic at all. Why? Because maybe they fed him, you know, some grass right at the beginning of his life and, you know, now it qualifies. So I get what you're saying. And it almost makes you have to be a scientist or a detective to figure out what's in your foods. And that sucks.
Well, I'm super stoked to talk to you more about bringing us to Amazon. I know right now, so we launched just under 3 months and this month we're on track to doing 250,000 in revenue.
It's incredible. It's incredible. Yeah. Yeah. What's been your go-to market like strategy off Amazon? Like, you know, what was your kind of outside of just creating an amazing product, which I do think is the most important, because I can sell turds, like I can sell anything really, but it will eventually have an end of the life cycle, right? People will start reviewing it. People will like word of mouth will eventually kill it. Like it is about ultimately having a good product. And then from there, was it influencers, you know, was it kind of like, you know, sales funnel type stuff, like getting people to try it? You know, what were some of the strategies you've done in the last 3 months to get a business to from zero to 250,000?
So first is having a value proposition that's easy to communicate to your customers, and so that your customers can also easily communicate it to their friends, because then they act as like the Facebook ad, right? And if you have a good product in a category that's popular, I guess, with an easy value, like a value proposition that's easy to explain to your friends. Well, I think with good branding, your Facebook ad spend is actually going to double or triple, because you may spend $20, $30 cost for an acquisition. However, that's now $10 because they've now recommended three people.
And if they're subscribing in there, it's a, you know, commoditized product in regards to like a consumable, where it's something that they're going to come. The goal is that they enjoy the product, they come back and buy and become a subscriber.
Yeah. That's the one thing is like, we don't have profit very much on our first starter kit. Like we're not really making money off the first order. It's really because we're offering this glass vessel, this spoon, this mug, and a box that we've offered for free shipping, all for $39.99, $40. And then it's more about the resupply bag that we send in a compostable mailer.
Got it. I love it. And that's honestly with Marnology services, like when we engage with a brand, I'm not making money a lot of times when we sign to start working together. It's, you know, because I've spent 9 years learning what I know, and I'm exchanging that in the first few months, right? The team it's like a knowledge transfer of everything that we know. We're like, hey, this is basically like going to school to get a doctorate degree. Like as far as the amount of time we've spent studying this topic, and we're going to give that to you as a brand, you know, whether that's branding advice, messaging advice, SEO, advertising, profitability with logistics, like it's just this big dump in the first 3 months, you know? It's during that time that it's like, no, so I have to be more particular about what brands we choose. Like, how long are they going to stay with us? Do we think that there's upside to this? Is this like a product that's going to continue to grow? You know, like, are they going to release new products over time? Like, you know, you're thinking about all those things now as an owner that can choose. Like, honestly, there's probably 50 agencies in the world, like Marknology, maybe, and we're not all created equal. You know what I mean? So if you think about the number of product-based companies there are by those 50 agencies, it's crazy math to understand like how many people need what we do. And so because of that, it's about making them understand that you're in it for the long game, that this is a relationship. You're trying to be as part of their team, not like a contract team. Like, we're trying to be part of that team. And there's just like, yeah, in that first part, we're like, look, we're giving you a ton of value at like hardly any cost in exchange for like the amount of time we've put into learning this. Like, how much time did you put into getting the formula just right? You know, and there's that first exchange with the bet that we're going to continue to work together for a while, you know? So I totally get that. And I think anytime you're bringing value early, though, you're in a good position, you know, to gain customer base. I mean, it's really like the bar is set so low in my regard, in my opinion, from like brands and how they interact with customers and the service level they provide and stuff like that. I'm like, the bar is so low that if you just come in providing value and like actually like respond to customers, like, you know, issues or their reviews, like brands don't even respond to the reviews on Amazon that customers leave, positive or negative. I'm like, you have to engage just like social media or anything else. People want to talk to real people. They want to buy from real people. They want to know, like, you had this problem for yourself and they relate to it. And if you're not like, you mainly what you said was like, you got to get the messaging right. And then the branding makes the messaging just that much more powerful.
You're making a good point about Facebook and commenting and reviews and commenting. So we respond. I myself, even every day, I'm on Facebook ads and, or like, I'm looking at my Facebook comments and just every single question we answer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then on Instagram, a lot of people like to repost our stories. So they create a story and then they, upload it to Instagram. I will individually, this is actually something that's pretty cool for brands to do, is like, I'll send a voice note. Hey, Julie, thank you so much for reposting your, or thank you so much for posting Everyday Dose on your Instagram. Let me know how your experience is. If I can help in any way, let me know.
That's super cool.
It literally takes like 10 seconds and I maybe spend 5 minutes a day hitting up customers who will repost Instagram.
I love that. It's genius because, it's not that it's that novel, but it's like no one else is doing that.
Personal. So, because yeah. You actually hear my voice.
Just engage. Like, you know, I know a girl that's in Miami that runs an e-commerce brand, Hannah. She's been on the podcast before. And one thing she did that I hadn't seen before at the time, and this is a little bit back, but it was like with every purchase, she had kind of this video that was like, hey, Hannah, like, thank you, you know, and just like, you're getting to meet the owner that made these things in a video in a personalized way. Not individual to individual like that, but it was still just like a thank you video versus just a thank you email. And it was like a spin on it, you know? And it's so, I think personalization is key to like growing e-commerce. And Amazon makes that hard, but there are a lot of ways to do that within Amazon. You just gotta be savvy, you know, and understand like what your goal is, like, you know, from like, it could be as simple as, you have a starter pack that you sell on Amazon. You don't offer the refills there or something like that. You have the starter pack. And for people to sign up and subscribe, they got to come to the website or to register that, you know, or there. I mean, you could do it both ways. But that's a simple example of like you're selling that there and then you're connecting with the customer outside of Amazon to get their like name, address, email, however you want to stay in contact with them, social media. If you're doing it, if you're walking the line correctly, I don't want anyone that's in Amazon to like hammer me over the wrist for this one. But it's like the same thing would be like if you're selling a printer and then you have a warranty and then you come to the website to register the warranty. And it's then that you collect their customer data that you can talk to forever. So knowing how to understand those marketplaces that do kind of protect the customer, how do you engage with them? How do you connect with them? How do you personalize, you know, your messaging? It's huge. Good advice. Mm.
So what's the platform that a lot of your customers are using for recurring payments?
Well, on Amazon, they have Subscribe Amazon. And Save, yeah. Right? So it's Subscribe and Save. And we actually do a lot of product inserts. And so like, let's say you're a pet supplement company, you have a high cost of acquisition, like it's cutthroat out there. But we know if we get a customer and we have a good product, we're going to keep them for a long time, good customer lifetime value. And so, in those instances, like from we'll do direct mail follow-up, we'll include like product inserts, we'll include like a sticker with a rebate and a discount back, like reminding them about Subscribe and Save, like, hey, this is the second time you've ordered, like, do you know about the Subscribe and Save program? Like, you can save 15% by setting it on a reoccurring order cycle. You know, just like we're doing those extra touches instead of just being like, well, they should know about it, you know, like we're doing all the touches to be like, you should engage in this program, here's how you do it. Or there's if they're doing it on a on the website. I haven't actually been engaged with a brand in e-commerce that's doing a subscription model where I'm in charge of setting it up. So,
we're using Recharge.
Okay.
And so there's like Recharge, which was like the DTC Recharge subscription platform. And anybody on here who's going to maybe try that, get ready for so many problems. Like in their customer service, like, oh gosh, it's been so difficult. Everything needs to be completely custom programmed and still super clunky errors. And I was wondering if you maybe knew of another one.
No, one thing I really like about the Amazon platform is like, as for all the reasons people don't enjoy it, like they're hiding customer data or not allowing you to do pixels or like things like that. They now have attribution, so you can track like how much of your traffic is coming from your Facebook ad and landing on Amazon and looking for you. You can do a lot more stuff than people used to know. And one thing I'd say is that you don't ever have to handle the data. So you're not having to run like, a lot of that authentication, a lot of that security stuff that you need to do if you're like keeping people's credit cards and then recharging them on a monthly basis. Like if you're on Amazon, that's not even part of your, you know, your worries. You know what I mean? So,
yeah. So we actually don't either. So Recharge is like,
they're the ones doing it. Right. And now you're in a way captive to them because you need what they offer. You know, so I think that's kind of where it's at. And then it's like, they're, if they're like, hey, we're the only one and we're the only one that does this, you have to deal with it. That's where it really sucks. But to each their own. You know, a lot of brands that we start with actually have a website and then they just redirect to Amazon for a long time.
Why would someone do that? So if you already got someone clicking on your ad on Facebook or going to your website, why pay Amazon the 20%? Is it 20%?
So it's like 15% of the selling price. So if it's $100, it'd be like 15. And then if you're doing FBA, it's probably another 15%, depending on what you're shipping. A supplement bottle is probably pretty cheap. Or like a refill pack. Right. But, that's the pick, pack, ship fee. So they're doing all of the logistical handling. That's about 15%. So I'd say it's about 30% overall, but the difference is, like when you have a website, no one knows that you exist. You do all these other things to get them there, right? Whether you're paying Recharge, Auth.net, your blogs, your front end designer, your back end designer, your
customer service platform,
fulfillment. Yeah, your customer service platform. There's all these little things that get people there that you either pay to maintain it or you're paying to get that traffic there. And if you were to break all that down, all the way down to the labor you're paying to pick, pack, and ship the box, it's like, let's compare. Right. So what I love about it, it's kind of like you were talking about this earlier with the messaging and you're like, it's a hot topic, like it's a trendy product. I would consider that like demand capture, thinking about it like you're in the game of demand capture. People are already looking for like shrooms or alternatives to Adderall or things like that. And you just want to capture those people looking for that. Demand generation is like you're creating something that no one knows about and you have to like make it trendy. Right. So the kind of the two differences. And I would say that on Amazon, demand capture is just way easier than in other platforms because I don't have to get people to Amazon. Amazon's doing a great job of doing that. And all I've had to focus on, at least as a consultant on my end, is how to capture them once they're there. So people are like directly searching for product. They're not reading blogs that's like, what's the best way to microdose or what's the best alternative to Adderall? And then reading a blog about the comparison guides and then finding a link to your product and being like, I'm going to try everydaydose.com and give it a shot. That's kind of how it happens on Google. It's not a social ad, right? On Amazon, it's like they're typing in everyday dose or they're typing in mushroom supplements or lion's mane supplements or something like that. And you want to show up for one of them and then, you know, get that click and then get them to understand your story and buy once they get there. So just a little bit different strategy, right? Same strategies, but like kind of different methodologies. And to me, because you're not having to worry about the quality of Facebook ads or any of those kinds of funnels like that. And it's really just about creating high converting product detail pages and storefronts and things like that. You're worried less about half the process, so to speak. Like, you know, it's just just get them there when they're there. Get them. There's an advertising side of Amazon that gets you showing up in pages and sponsored products. And you may also like and video ads and all that kind of stuff. But it's really as basic as get people there and get them to convert. You know, and we have conversion rates with some of our brands that are close to 50%, literally like 47%. with some of our products that are higher priced than other people. And you're like, how do you get a listing where one out of every two people that land on it buy it? Like, that's insane. And if you're just doing your job right on Amazon, you've got great reviews, you've got the product in stock, you're doing a good job of explaining to them why they want to buy your product over everyone else's or the value you bring, it's possible on that platform. And I haven't seen it possible like that anywhere else. You know, no. I think your Facebook ads guy would freak out if like one out of every two people that he sent there was buying, right?
We would go from like 100 to 200 customers per day to like 1,000.
Insane, right? Insane. Yeah. So it can be like, yeah, you're paying 70%, but we're looking at that one individual sale. And I'm looking at like, yeah, but would you rather make 50,000, like do 100,000 in sales and make 50,000 in profit? Because you didn't waste all this money in ad spend, or like it's just very profitable, or would you rather make a million and make 50,000? You know, like what are you trying to do? Mm-hmm. And I think that the customers that go to websites versus the customer that go to Amazon are not always the same. And so when you understand that, you're like, it's not about cannibalizing. It's about just representing the brand in the same way on every platform. Meaning if people interact with us on Amazon, we're like, they're getting this experience. If they're interacting with us here, they're getting this experience. If they chat on a Facebook chat that pops up, they're getting this experience. Like, and it's the same. We're bringing the same quality across the board. I think that's really the goal, in my opinion, is just whatever channel you're, if you have customers on that channel, you should be there in a perfect world. Mm-hmm. And if you're there, you should be as represented as best you can on that channel.
I am a big believer of like you said, using a person who's specialized in each thing. So, I mean, I've got an incredible ad buyer. Maybe I need an incredible agency to help me with Amazon.
No shit. Like, I'm not always trying to sell, but I really believe
what I'm sold.
Yeah. It's just like, I've seen every brand and every manufacturer, like for the 9 years I've been banging my head against the wall, getting people to pay attention to Amazon and like what's going on for brands. And that they need to be here and that's growing and that their listings look like shit. And I point them out and I'm like, this is a horrible brand experience. And you have this little guy that's nobody that's advertising on a massive brand name because the brand's just not even there and paying attention. And just like, it's a mess, you know? And so, very passionate about it and very passionate about like, you know, some of the margin things, because it's like Amazon's an algorithm. So like on a website, when you get a sale, typically, especially if you're not getting them to subscribe, you collect like the payment, maybe more than you would on Amazon. Maybe you're collecting like 97% because there's just a 3% transaction fee minus all your costs to get it there. But let's just say you're at 97%, right? And then you've got like your cost of goods in there, you know, like you're ending higher than Amazon sale for sale. But on the web, you're getting their customer data and you're getting their email address. On Amazon, you're getting some of that, okay? And then meaning cut some customer data, not all of it, but you're also getting a sale and you're getting like a momentum boost to the next sell. So like, because your listings are like in an algorithm and they have a ranking to them, like in that category, like let's say mushroom supplements or something like that, then it would say like with each sale that you get, it kind of brings the next sale easier. You move up in the rank, you get higher rated, you get a review, Amazon sees that there is a conversion. It's like, oh, let's show them a little more often. Oh, let's show them a little more often. And so each sale that comes in is kind of like, if you're in that long game, it's very beneficial to push all your sales in, onto Amazon versus like split them out and have like a little bit of each. If you're a smaller brand and you're not crushing it on the web, right? It can be a huge advantage to just go all in on one, become top rated or something like that in a small category and really create like a splash and then bring that out to e-commerce. So, yeah.
I have a question. So for shipping, because I know you have to send it to warehouses, how do I determine like which warehouse to send? Say I want to send like 5,000 units of Everyday Dose to Amazon. I know that they do like, they have different fulfillment centers. So would I send one to like New York and one to LA, or like, how would we determine that?
So whenever you're like setting up your account, you tell them where you're warehousing out of, like where the products would ship from. And then there's hundreds of warehouses. And so typically they choose one close to you. I mean, it's like really cheap to get the inventory there. Amazon just makes it really cheap through their partnered system. And then like for us here in Kansas City, the goods go to Illinois, for example. And then in Illinois, I know that that is a fulfillment center where it splits it all out to a whole bunch of other warehouses. And so some of them are like for food, some of them are for small and light goods, some of them are for whatever. but that's how Amazon keeps things cheap, is they make you kind of have one cost to get it in and they move things around. You can track all of that. The difference is like when it goes into Amazon's warehouse, it's still your inventory. You still own it. You can pull it back. You can ship it to influencers. You can plug it into your website and have it fulfilling orders. You can do a lot of things.
Cool.
We're having some fun. I get passionate just talking about it because I'm like, it can do some really cool things. It's really just like understanding how to make it work for you versus.
Yeah, for sure. Especially because my biggest issue is logistics, like shipping, like issues all the time. And if Amazon's handling that for 15%, that's not so bad.
Right. Yeah. And you can like, they're sitting there. You can almost use it like USPS and you just like go into their system and you like type in the customer's address, name, address, and say ship one. And it just like goes out to them, you know? So that's a pretty cool feature. I own a couple of brands and as they were growing and smaller, like I'm trying to run a business. I don't have time to go ship some stuff or like be chasing down something like that when it can take me like 2 seconds to send to a VA or someone on my team that gets this shipped out.
What if it gets, all right, so this is interesting. So what if we send it to a customer, the customer says it was stolen or they never got their package. So Amazon, I know, is pretty good about sending a new one. Is that a hit on the brand, or is that going to be like an insurance claim that Amazon covers?
Well, it can be both. So like if it's damaged in shipping and you get a bad review, Amazon's the one shipping it, like they will not count that review against you, or they'll handle the issue. I wouldn't say that every time they just send them a replacement, because that's kind of been gamified by shitty customers. But you know, if they, they'll take pictures, like, you know, we actually use a service called Getida. Give them a shout out on the show. They're out of New York, actually. Happy to introduce you if you ever want. They have a good little e-commerce circle there. Those guys are, there's always like returns coming into Amazon, or like you're checking in a shipment and it's short 50 units, or like a return comes back and how long do we get reimbursed for it? And it's just like, because everything's on these delays, and worrying about that as an agency, like Marknology, is insanity. Like there's no way I can care about that for a brand on that level. But Getida basically has a software that plugs in and tracks all of those things. And then when it finds that we don't get reimbursed, or you're not, like you haven't made a claim against Amazon, they go in there and make those claims and then just take a percentage of what you get back.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it's super cool as a service.
They only do it for Amazon, because I'm working with a 3PL that's like, it's a headache. Or another issue is like they put in an address. Sorry, go on.
I think it's just Amazon. Okay. Understanding Amazon system and how it works, and then knowing how to like file claims against that. But I would assume there's some kind of service for that for like the traditional logistical providers of the world, like UPS and FedEx, and someone that just understands how to like file claims with those people too.
Yeah, I've been working with a company called Shipmunk.
Okay, I've heard of them.
They're very difficult, and I think it's because they're just scaling too quickly.
Yes.
And it's, you know, different customer service person each time. No one understands, like, yeah, it's just,
right. This is a massive thing happening in our area, like obviously the pandemic.
They always blame it on the pandemic, though.
It's like, well, the logistics are just absolute shit. And it's like, everyone closing all the stores up has made these companies scale at a level that like a business just can't scale indefinitely, instantaneously. And so they're trying to do the same thing in the Amazon marketing space, where these agencies are getting funding. Regular marketing agencies are adding Amazon departments. Teams that were like pretty solid now are getting like double the business that they were getting. So they've, you know, doubled the workload, and the expertise is just getting spread thin. Like it's, e-commerce has been on a growing path, but like expertise is growing thin. Like I don't think that there's a company, like if you're trying to hire someone in-house, and let's say you're offering someone like six figures to do Amazon, I don't believe that I'm hireable. I don't think that you can find someone of my expertise hireable for a company. I truly believe that. So I'm like, if that's not even out there, you know what I mean? And so it just trickles down. It's just trickling all the way down. Limited resources from the logistics side. That's why I wanted to do my own logistics, because I didn't want to have to deal with that when it comes to my own brands. I wanted to be able to provide the service I wanted, high quality. You have issues that come up, I want to be able to try new things. If I want to create a variety pack or a kit or like something like that, I want to be able to do it on the fly and not have to like go through this whole process with a big 3PL. My team understands Amazon and e-commerce. So they operate at a different level than people that are supplying Whole Foods and these big, you know, these big channels and by pallet. You know, it's just different.
We got to plug in NSFW, the New Society for Wellness. We just launched a merch line. We got to plug NSFW with Markology.
Okay, yeah, I love it. You guys doing like
what, merch, is it just like t-shirts, just like cool and hats t-shirts and hats? Like yeah, with like NSFW and fun stuff like that.
That's cool. I feel like we're gonna have to stay connected offline. I'm definitely gonna make a purchase just to try it out and let people know. I like to try this stuff out. We get on the show. Mm-hmm. Where can people reach with you as we wrap up? Like, where can people interact? Where can people buy? Obviously, don't be scared that he's not getting product in. We were just being transparent. We're gonna get that solved, and there'll be more.
I mean, we can sell it now. So what I recommend is
get in now
before we run out. But it will only be like max 21 day delay. Yeah, but you can reach me at jack@everydaydose. That's my personal email, everydaydose.com. If you go on Instagram, if you type in Everyday Dose, the mushroom latte will pop up. Someone from like Bali or Indonesia from 5 years ago took Everyday Dose, the claim, the handle. I've like literally messaged every single person who's ever liked or commented on a post from that username. And I was like, I'll give you $100 if you connect me to the person who owns this handle, because it's been inactive for like 4 years.
Wow. It's possible to buy it. Like, if you go through the right channels, if it hasn't been moving, I don't know. I've known some people have. I haven't done it myself.
So right now it's at the mushroom latte.
At the mushroom latte. Okay. Yeah. And if I repost, I'm definitely trying to get an audio reply. Okay. So if I don't get that, I'm going to feel let down.
Okay.
So if I make a purchase, I'm trying it. I post you on social media. I want the audio response.
You'll get the audio response.
I love it. Okay. That's what I'm in it for.
You can even test it, like not even have Markology, like from Markology, and okay. You'll just be like an undercover consumer and you'll still get that voice note.
Deal. I'll do it from like my roommates or something. You won't see it coming and we'll see the voice note. This has been awesome. I love just chatting it up, just talking real talk about what it's like to get something started. And almost all of the great businesses I've seen come from someone trying to solve a need in their own lives or to a close loved one or, you know, something like that. And so I'm very excited to try it, especially like the focus on the quality ingredients. I think that's really something that appeals to me. Thanks for putting up with my pup.
For sure. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. We'll talk soon. And I'd love to talk Amazon anytime. So as you start chasing that down, just let me know. At least point you in the right direction. I know a lot of good people in both California and New York. So can connect you with some entrepreneurs that either I'm working with or that are solid. Create a little ecosystem around kind of your e-commerce journey. I know 3 months in is like, I love e-commerce. So I'm excited for you kind of experiencing it the first time and seeing those sales come in is adrenaline rush like no Adderall can ever do, you know?
Fuck yeah. Cool. I'm also going to hit you up about this box, the box company in the US.
Awesome. I got a plug for you. Let's connect offline on email. To everyone listening, thanks for being on the show, listening to us. If you're driving, we'll have the links to all of his Instagram, social media handles, website in the bottom notes of the show. Thanks again to our sponsor for today's episode, Fullscale.io, helping you build software teams quickly and affordably. I'll see you next time, guys.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.